If you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. The day science begins to study non-physical phenomena, it will make more progress in one decade than in all the previous centuries of its existence. Nikola Tesla.
Welcome to the Frequency Shifter Show. I'm your host, Corinne Summers, founder of Artisan Pharmacy. In this show, we explore ways to raise the frequency of ourselves, one another, and our planet. We're digging deep into all things metaphysical, from what is frequency, to the power of sound, the Schumann resonance, our DNA, Reiki, the energy of water, and beyond. All to shift our minds and bodies back into alignment with richer states of connection, elevated awareness, and maximum human potential. And we're bringing on the global experts and thought leaders to share their wisdom as they let us pick their brains around all these juicy, mysterious topics.
First of all, I don't know who Ricky is and metaphysical. Schumann's Renaissance? I don't even know. What are you talking about? Wait a minute. I need us to take a step back and calm down. What are we even talking about here?
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention, I have a co-host. The universe insisted. What can I say? This is Alex Terranova, founder of Dream Mason. He's sort of a newbie to some of this frequency stuff, and he's going to help keep everything balanced, grounded, and relatable.
So this show isn't just for the experts to nerd out on all things metaphysical, but it's an open welcome space for everyone to explore the mysteries of the universe and raise our frequencies together.
Today's guest, Sheetal Ranjan, was absolutely one of my favorites of the season. She touched my spirit and my soul in a different way. Her grace, absolute goddess level wisdom and humility and power in the way that she speaks and holds conversations and delivers just really, really important and powerful messages. She was phenomenal. And so Sheetal is an ascension coach. She's a sacred geometry thought leader. She's also a Reiki master, does quantum healing and a lot of other types of energy and frequency shifting work. I also have a little bit of a sort of like kismet connection with her, I think, because her story also started in Nepal, or I guess one of her, the big pieces of her awakening. She didn't talk about it on the show, but she talks in her bio about how on a visit to the mountains of Nepal, she found herself aligning with the universal energy matrix and downloading the absolute wisdom of sacred geometry, and just described the experience as being overwhelming as an avalanche. And when she returned home, that was the end for her. That was when she started, you know, diving deep into sacred geometry and all of that. I had a similar experience. I spent 3 months in Nepal in 2011, crossing into 2012. And I spent my time in the mountains. I volunteered at an orphanage. I did so many different things and experienced so much beauty in nature and in studying some of these arts. And I came back, left my finance job, and started the path to where you see me today.
We dive into so many cool things. I also agree with you. She was one of my favorite guests. And I know we both are like, it's weird to say, but it's so true. We can have favorites. And I think it's just the topic, her energy, her vibe. She taught us and talks about sacred geometry and how it appears everywhere. We talk about frequency and sound and how that's actually a product of geometry. We talk about the golden ratio. What else? Sacred shapes that exist everywhere in all faiths. We talk about quantum healing. I feel like I could go on and on. I have more notes from this episode than I think I do for almost any other episode. We even dive into trauma and like the lessons we learned and how that works into frequency and spirituality and whatnot. I learned a lot in this episode. I found myself more drawn to wanting more of these shapes and symbols in my life. It was like learning about crystals for the first time. And going, wait, this like kind of makes sense. And as she taught, how she broke down sound and geometry, it made me be like, wait, I want more of this in my life, like in my house, around me. Yeah, really cool stuff.
She, I was impressed by her ability to take some of those very complex topics and put them into plain English in such a graceful and beautiful way. And that's one of the reasons why I'm raving about her, because these topics can go right over people's heads and be very difficult to digest, especially if you're early on in your, you know, spiritual healing, awakening, you know, journey. So this is the episode for you if you want to have a deeper understanding of this, these kind of deeper concepts.
What was her... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I loved her definition of the frequency shifter. They're all perfect. But hers is a young and fresh synonym for sacred seeker, which is one of the words she uses in her practice. She calls her students sacred seekers, a title that inspires action in people to shift their perspective through their thoughts, words, actions, emotions, beliefs, and intentions, in order to master their own energy field, claim sovereignty over their own energy, be responsible for what they put into the world, and become master manifestors. Mm-hmm.
Well, everyone's going to love this episode. Let's jump right in. Okay, so we're going to jump right in. And the first thing that I have to ask you about is sacred geometry. That's the way I was introduced to you. It's not only that, it's I see it everywhere and it's talked about, but what does it mean? Because I'm like, this just feels convenient that these shapes mean something.
So it's really interesting when we say what is sacred geometry, right? And I'm so glad I have to mention at this point, I'm so glad that that's how you heard of me. That's like my that's a milestone for me right now, right there. So thank you, Alex. Thank you so much. Sacred geometry is really the innate design of everything. And it's so simple, what I said, that it becomes very complicated to explain it, right? So sacred geometry, when I talk about it, it's the innate design of everything. Whether you move through nature, of course, the simplest thing would be to look at flowers, right? Flowers all have these beautiful geometric shapes, whether they're wild flowers, whether they're, flowers that are exotic flowers, all of them have this beautiful sort of geometric symmetry that it has. And then you start from there. But then you begin to notice that this geometry also exists within other aspects of nature, including animals. So if I could give you the idea of geometry and the Fibonacci spiral and, you know, all of these details of sacred geometry, all you need to look at is the horns of a ram or the tail of a chameleon or a nautilus shell or the trunk of an elephant. And in order for those things to curl in that sort of fractalized form, right, it then gets you to the question, why does it come out in that perfect symmetric form? You see? And why? I mean, who decided? Did the goats get together and sit one day and go, listen, we're going to do spiral horns, you know? And it's really interesting to then go from there further. And there's enough and more research out there now that shows that if you look at it, the biggest spiral we know is a galaxy. The galaxy is nothing but a huge spiral. Now take that galaxy, and I want you in your mind, superimpose that on a cyclone. You know, when a hurricane, when the weather report shows it, it looks like little galaxies, you see? And then from there, you begin to travel across, and everywhere you look, like you said, Alex, everywhere you look, you are seeing this geometry. What's fascinating, however, is that this geometry is the result of sound. It's the result of vibration of and frequency of an any object, inorganic, organic, invisible, visible, tangible, or intangible, right? So you're looking at sacred geometry being the visual representation of frequency and vibration. And the only way for us to be able to sort of prove this one way is when you have cymatics experiments where they produce sound onto a blackboard and there's salt on it. And just by, you know, the frequency that's played, if it's a versus a, the salt on that's been thrown on top of the blackboard begins to shift itself into beautiful, symmetric, geometric shapes. And that blows your mind, doesn't it?
That was one of the ways my mind was blown and I got into sacred geometry myself, was seeing the singing bowls and the mm-hmm. way that sound, and that how, whether it's flowers or something else floating on the bowl, that the water, the sound and the water, you know, come together to create these beautiful shapes. And like you said, the question, it's like, why? It just,
yes. And that's where
we want to go deeper and understand. And the spiral, is there anywhere else in the body besides the human ear? I know the ear is one of the places that the spiral is in the human body, but does it go deeper into, like, is there anywhere in our cells or deeper in the body that
for sure. spiral? I start from the physical space. If you curl your hand in, like you're making a fist, and then you see your elephant trunk right there. You know, that's your Fibonacci spiral right there. And then if you measure from the top of your finger to your wrist and multiply that by 7.5, that's your height. And here's a really fascinating one. Now I need to know which one of you is flexible, right? So I want you to place one of your, any foot, your right foot or your left foot, and put it in between your wrist and your inner elbow. So take your foot.
This one's not for me.
Okay, done.
That's your shoe size. Your foot is exactly the distance between your wrist
and your elbow. Oh my goodness. Shut up. Yes. Alex, sit on the floor and do it right now.
So I think that, I mean, everything, nothing is always the same in nature. There has to be times where this isn't, I mean, is that there has to be times, right? Because we're so all unique and different. Everybody's bodies are not proportioned the same.
Everybody's body is proportionate to their unique ratio.
Okay.
But the ratio is always the same, and it's called the golden ratio, which is the 1:1.618. That 1:1.618 is everything. The distance between the, you know, outer edges of both your eyes and from the top of your nose to your lips are exactly the same distance.
You've heard of like Vitruvian Man, Alex.
Yeah, well, wouldn't that leave everyone just like perfectly symmetrical
Everyone isn't perfect because, and I've seen these, have you seen these TikToks? And, you know, they try to place the perfect symmetric face onto someone.
Yeah.
But they are using how do I explain it? The base ratio that they're using is based on someone else. The ratios are based on you.
Oh.
So if from the top of my finger, mm-hmm. to the first bend in my finger, let's say that's my one.
Okay.
I can't use Alex's one and then measure myself.
Mm.
And then to take what you asked further, you say not everybody is born with that sort of measurements, but that goes into a space of mutations. That goes into a space of defects, right? Those defects are part of the vibrations that create us, right? Those defects are part of those vibrations glitching along the way. So that then leads to, unfortunately, you see babies that are born without arms. So you have somebody whose ears, my ears, in fact, are one of them is lower than the other. You know, there's always mutations depending on what you carry in your DNA as vibrations. And that takes me back to what we were talking about. Sacred geometry is the visual representation of vibration and frequency. And this vibration and frequency is everywhere. It's in the very DNA of plants and animals and, you know, land. And it's in all of the planets. This kind of code, essentially, this symmetry is within everything, right? And rewind back again. And we talked about how sound and Corinne, you were saying that cymatics was the first time your mind got blown, right? But what really kind of took me aback was an entire group of scientists decided to call the first event of the universe Big Bang. The entire English language at your disposal, and you decided to call it a bang because it was sound. you know? It was the sound, it was like a boom, you know, it goes like that. And that sound, the Hindus called it the primordial sound, which is right? And it's just the intonation, the indication of the sound, right? That sound has been traveling across the universe and has not stopped traveling. And we are all a result of that vibration.
The vibration of creation.
The vibration of creation.
You have such a beautiful way of explaining these topics. You also, I'm impressed with how much your voice actually sounds like a singing bowl. That's one of my personal life goals. So congratulations that you're there. You actually sound like you have toned your throat chakra to the point that you actually sound like a live singing bowl. I think people have a hard time understanding, and I personally, as a coach, this is one of the areas I struggle as I'm integrating more of this frequency information in my own teaching, but explaining this relationship, you know, and conceptualizing sound in vibration, right? Like that sound, something we hear, creates a physical ripple.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the Emoto water experiments.
Mm-hmm, yes.
That was one thing that really, another one of my big aha moments in connecting some of these pieces, that not just sound, but also words and thoughts are a vibration, and that the words, you know, that we speak to others and speak to ourselves create a ripple within our own bodies and with others we may be speaking them to or even thinking about, that, you know, this idea that, oh, wow, my thoughts and my words create things. Absolutely. And it changes the geometric, or can change the shape of physical matter in my own body and in others. So that's not really a question, but could you help us kind of
love it? I love it. I love it. I love that in an interview today, we can sit. I mean, how blessed we are to be in a day and age that people from across the world are talking to each other and talking about this, talking about what was earlier considered very esoteric, where what was considered only accessible by the sort of top echelons of religions. Only they had access to this information. But today, someone like me who grew up in the city, who has had a tumultuous childhood, who I never thought I would get into something like something of this sort. But the fact that we can sit here and talk about this today, and science is finally proving what spirituality has been yammering on about for years, blows my mind. That is truly amazing. Yes, there was no question there,
Corey. Phenomenal time to be alive. I'm sorry, I'm not the expert podcaster. I'm the nerd. Alex, you better ask me questions. Wait. I'm just like, these are the things I want to talk about. Can you just go?
Well, this is all good. And there's, so the thing that is that like is ringing for me is, okay, so I'm sitting here also with one of my coasters. I don't know what this is called. What is this? What's the...
It's a Metatron's cube. A Metatron's cube.
So knowing this, right, I'm seeing it in front of me, besides it being like on a crystal coaster and feeling like, you know, I got good vibes in my space. Knowing the code, if I know the code for a computer, I can program, I can create something inside of it, right? I can make an app, I can build a website. Knowing or understanding sacred geometry, seeing it, you know, having facilitation with it or awareness, what does it provide besides like aha moments?
That's a wonderful thing to ponder about, really. Knowledge in itself, if you were speaking to me about 10 years ago, I'd have been like, this is a game changer. Just knowing it is going to change your life. Things are never going to be the same again, right? So then 10 years ago, that would be me. I'd be like, Alex, come here. Let me show you. Let me throw some Metatron's cubes at you, right? And it's really interesting that all of this knowledge, truth be told, is readily available. So what was, well, even before the internet became big, right? Sacred geometry information has been open source since day one. Whether you look at Vedic geometry from India, from the ancient texts, whether you look at how churches have the Vesica Piscis and they have the fleur-de-lis and they have all of these different sacred shapes that are used as part of the religion itself, or take a look at Islam. In Islam, basically, the only art allowed is Islamic patterns, which is sort of like, these beautiful, intricate patterns. You'll see Iranian art is like that. You'll see Arabic art is like that. Because Islam talks about, and you guys know the general idea of Islam, right? It talks about how do not worship idols. Don't be stuck on, the idols and the projections of the universe, but instead go straight to the source. And when they say go straight to the source, they go, you're not allowed to put up pictures of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. You're not allowed to, there is no photo of Allah, right? However, you go to the mosque and they've basically got sacred geometry everywhere. And they believe that when you pray in the mosque, it actually expands your intention. Right? So to answer very correctly to what you're saying, the availability of the knowledge does not always translate to the transformation of your consciousness. The knowledge is great. Definitely, 100% having that Metatron's cube that's lying in your office is doing you a world of good. Because any kind of geometry placed within, even in Feng Shui and India's version of Feng Shui, which is Vastu Shastra, which they claim to be the original Feng Shui, right? All of these versions have geometry, as probably is, right? So all of these have geometry as part of their system. You place it around you. You have beautiful geometric shapes around you. Fantastic. People have geometry tattoos. We all know one hippie who has a geometry tattoo. We know it. There's someone. Me too. Me too, Corina.
It might be these girls. But even right. In ancient Egypt too. And if you travel in any country and you go to any kind of pyramid or megalithic structure, sacred geometry is layered into it. I'm a Reiki master, and it's same thing with symbols and these shapes. They're believed to have so much power, whether you're thinking about them, surrounding yourself with them, just being aware of them, picturing it. But I think with it's more about what it means to us. Yeah. Like it's how
it definitely is. And it's also the intention behind it. So when you talk about sacred geometry, when you talk about the symbols in Reiki, when you talk about having sacred geometry around you, like Alex has his Metatron's cube next to him, I can see sort of a pyramid behind him, but that's a Mount Shasta itself.
It is a pyramid, but it's not a sacred geometry.
And keeping geometry around you definitely instigates, I want to say, right? It kind of tickles the energy field around the space to reorganize and become more symmetric. This is true. This has been proven. So one of the most powerful shapes coming from the Indian subcontinent is the Sri Yantra, right? Now the Sri Yantra, if you look at it, it's about 13 triangles upwards and downwards, and there's a little dot in the middle. When you look at it, it's just another shape. But what's interesting is just like the Reiki symbols that Corinne uses, just like all of the different ancient spaces that you go to and sacred geometry is part of it, it is also the years of intentions that have been sort of whispered into that shape that matters. So if I take a glass of water like Dr. Masaru Emoto did, and he, said love, love, love. But if we kept that water there in good conditions, in hygienic conditions, and we always every morning, sort of whispered love into that water could possibly cure someone. It's the amount of intention and the number of years, thousands of years worth of power in a symbol that then when passed on to someone and, you just hand it over to them. And I actually have someone who's done this and it worked. It's the placebo effect, isn't it? They give that shape to another person and says, listen, you start using this little piece of sheet as your coaster, drink water on it, and so on and so forth. Next thing you know, this guy's business booms. Next thing you know, this guy is making money. Next thing you know, his health has become better. And he goes, it's since that day that that guru gave me this shape. So yes, it's the sacred geometry, but it is also the vibrations that have been coded into it through the power of several minds, you see? And then comes the part where, how can I use this to transform my life? Can I have it around and just it'll just do the job? No. Your intention matters. Your faith in the matter matters, right? I know people who have done, Corinne, you're talking about Reiki. You know, all in all, between you and me, let's say we have 10 certifications. Let's say, all right? I know people who have 25 certifications and they're the most anxious people I've ever seen. It is not in the hoarding of knowledge that sacred geometry as well, and I'm going to stick to the subject, hopefully, right? Sacred geometry is not just about having those shapes and spaces around you. It's not just about having talismans around you, but it's also applying the principles of sacred geometry that matters, which means if I apply negative emotions and negative conversations, these are the consequences that are going to happen. If I apply positive codes, these are the consequences that are going to happen. The choice is completely mine whether I want to use negative or positive vibrations. There is no good, there is no bad, there is no right, there is no wrong. There just is. You can pick and choose whichever vibration you want to use, but in order to do that, you have to, what's the word for it? Exercise sovereignty on your energy field. You've got to be like,
you have to take responsibility.
Yeah.
I don't remember if we were talking about this before or if this was part of your, I think part of your response to what it is to be a frequency shifter, but that was something I wanted to talk about is, you know, this idea it's taking responsibility for your own energy and your own thoughts, your own actions, your own emotions, the people you surround yourself with. And I think in our modern world, it goes to so many basics of what do we surround ourselves with on technology? How do we manage who are we consuming information from? What are we letting ripple in, which, you know, like you said, is then going to ripple back out, and understanding the synchronicity and the relationship. That's what actually gives you the power, is because then you can do something with it. You can decide, okay, instead of surrounding myself with this negative thing, I'm going to surround myself with this positive thing instead and accept that ripple.
It's really interesting to look at that perspective as well, right? You said, yes, in the modern world where you are constantly being badgered with Wi-Fi radiation, with Jesus, the pollution is unbelievable, you know? However, what sacred geometry quantum healing is the current working title for what I do. Yes. What the principles are teaching us is very interesting. You can either say that I need to leave this space with all of the Wi-Fi radiation and pollution and the angry bosses and all of these things, and I have to remove myself from this situation. Or you can shift into a person who exercises complete sovereignty on their energy field and master the power that you become like a duck. And the radiation and the pollution and the angry bosses are like water on your back. That is the power. Mm. And initially we used to, I don't want to say old school, the old shift in consciousness, age of Aquarius, right? So during that time, the 70s and 80s, it was about, hey man, I don't need your bad vibes. I'm going to step away from bad vibes. But we live in modern society. If you, me, and Alex just go off on top of a mountain and we say, we're just going to live here because we don't want bad vibes from people. But as the frequency shifters in this world, what we're now doing is we're injecting ourselves. We are basically the, what's his name? Morpheus. We're the Morpheus of modern society. We're unplugging people out of a disillusion that they have, that they have to deal with torture. Everything is bad, but you're shifting it into a space where you say, I can stay right here and this can become the most beautiful place. That is the effort.
I love how you're I love how you're explaining this. I've been in coaching conversations lately with people that are like, no, but my trauma, my story. And I'm like, and I'm coming as a coach. I'm like, you're more committed to your story and what's happened in your past than what you could be and what the space I'm holding for you to step into. And the way you're saying it is so beautiful in, it's like so delicate and flowy. But that's what I really hear, that it's almost like and I'm seeing it more from a grounded, like, hey, it's just a choice. You can choose to be your trauma and it happened. And I want to have empathy and love for it. And you could also choose to have it be the thing that makes you who you are, or choose to step totally out of it. You have this sovereignty of choice. And that's really what I'm getting from this, that ultimately, like anything in my space, the crystals, the healing, the coffee, the interaction here, the things that have happened to us, we really have that power to decide, almost like magicians.
Literally, what, like,
right?
Yeah, not kind of, actually.
Actually, like words
create things, abracadabra.
Well, the thing that I also notice is there's a lot of people that do that thing that you were talking about where they know all the stuff, right? They say all the right words. They have all the right language. Their social media looks like, and their life is a mess. And I hold it. I'm curious what you think. I relate to that as they have it here, but it's not embodied.
It's really interesting because they might have all of, I'm just going to speak about this. This is one person who in theory has all of that knowledge. Their social media looks perfect. They've done all of these certifications, but they're really miserable in their life. Right. And let's just look at that one small category of people. You see, there too, I find it really interesting that this person has such a role to play for us, because they are carrying the burden of all of the weight of their traumas, even though they have this knowledge. Somewhere or the other, it is triggering someone else or becoming a catalyst for someone else. Nobody is really ever wrong. Nobody's ever really wrong. We're all sort of in one part of our journey. And as soon as I begin to look at everything from that perspective, and as humans, we're told that we generally have just one perspective, and then you awaken and you start thinking you have two perspectives. I'm trying to constantly push myself to live in the perspective that everybody's perspective is right. Oh. Not right, is. Right. So this person who has all the knowledge but is still miserable, somewhere along the line, their journey fits like a puzzle with someone else who's really good at their work but doesn't have enough of the knowledge. We're like completing each other along the way, because we're all part of this one amazing oneness. You see. What Corinne can do, I cannot do. What I can do, Alex cannot do. And we complement each other in every way. And if we began to look at things from that perspective, suddenly you get less pissed about how people are dealing with the subject. You know, I used to get so mad about, I think it used to be a pet peeve, and now I'm slowly coming to terms with it, is where a lot of coaches and a lot of influencers in the spiritual space, they begin by talking about oneness, talking about balance and peace and harmony and the third eye and, you know, ancient knowledge. And then bam, you open the social media one day and they're part of a protest. Bam, you open social media one day and they're suddenly talking about a hashtag that they want you to follow. So I used to have such a pet peeve about it. And I said, but you know what? They too play a part in the bigger picture. You see? Then, sorry, I rewind back to what you said earlier, Alex, in terms of being in your trauma versus realizing that your trauma happened and now you can choose and have sovereignty over your own energy field, right? And there's something really interesting that I'm beginning to discover with my case study. So I recently hit, I think, 470 clients, private coaching clients. So it was a big number for me. So it was really interesting. And I keep collecting case studies, little jots and notes from the different sessions that I do. And when I sit down with clients, when we go through this process, what I deduce from this is there are two worlds, right? And these two worlds always exist. Both the worlds exist simultaneously. In one world, it's the low vibrational world. You woke up in the morning, you were really grumpy, and you went to work grumpy, and the rest of the day was grumpy. Your boss yelled at you and you came back, right? Simultaneously, there's that other world where you woke up, you were grumpy, but you played some music and you meditated, then you went to work and you spread that good vibe. And then your boss called you in and said, thank you for the work that you're doing. Both those worlds exist, and several versions of that world exist between those two extremes that I talked about. You choose which one you want to live today. Every day you have that choice. Living in the modern world, when you are faced with adversity, when suddenly you're triggered and your old trauma comes back, you can choose that you can either spiral into that trauma and do, you know, the different versions of being reckless, right? It's either go get drunk or do something reckless with your life, self-sabotage in some way, right? You are choosing to do that. The harder thing to do is to treat that trauma like it is the, please allow me to describe the story this way. Treat that trauma like the forbidden fruit, but still take a bite out of it. You know, to be able to take that trauma and treat it like a treasure, open it up and go, what are you teaching me today? You see, to be able to go back to that trauma over and over again, because that is a gift horse that keeps giving. You see, you can tap back into that one trauma and keep going and downloading new positive lessons from it each time, and it never stops giving you. But it's traumas that have the bad reputation, and that's so sad. You know, if at this moment, actually, in fact, do this exercise, Corinne and Alex and whoever is listening, right? I want you guys to sort of do me a favor, please close your eyes, right? And please think of the last time, the one of the times in your life, or the last time when the biggest betrayal happened in your life. You were so saddened by it. This situation that happened broke you. Now that you've thought of this, I want you to think what happened right after it happened. Did that situation not absolutely change your life? Did you not decide that from that moment on, things are going to completely change? And the reason you are sitting here looking so vibrant and beautiful today is because that situation happened to you at that time. Yes?
It wasn't the moment right after, but the...
What followed?
The moment was a catalyst, right? That yes. I can clearly see.
Yes.
And I'm totally with you on this, that I think of it like sometimes we can do the same thing with the best thing that happened.
Correct. For sure.
Oh my God, that was the catalyst that led to something that was
heartbreaking. And we always celebrate the best thing. We have birthdays. We have the day I got my promotion, my anniversary. We celebrate all of these things. I don't see nobody pulling up a cake, all right, on the day that that ex-boyfriend left me. Okay, that's the cake I want to see. Because that's the day you decided you were never going to allow this to happen to you again. That one time when somebody, that catalyst, like you said, right? For some people, it's very sudden. You see, some people, it's very sudden that one thing happens, it breaks them down. And in 3 days, they've suddenly transformed and they start sort of, they say, never again, and I'm going to change, right? But like Alex said, it's that one becomes the catalyst. From that moment, you know what you do not want to be, right? when is the last time you thought of calling up that person and saying thank you to them, the one who betrayed you? And I understand that's definitely not, you know, not something to be done. But even in your mind, the worst enemies are your best teachers. The worst scenarios that happen in your life are treasure coves. Oh my goodness. You know, every single time you kind of approach the trauma less like it's a monster and approach it more like it's a little tantrum throwing child and go up to it and say, hey, I love you. What are you trying to teach me this time? What are you reminding me? What wonderful strength of mine are you reminding me? And that there is how to apply sacred geometry, because every sound you produce from your body, right? And what are these sounds? From your heartbeat, to your words, to your thoughts, to all your bodily noises, you know, every fart and every burp and every gurgle in your body. All of these are producing vibrations. Every breath is producing vibrations, right? And this then goes out, like, imagine what my cymatics would look like. Corinne, your cymatics is, you know, all of the vibrations that you are producing from your body is turning into this beautiful, I don't know, I see it as that you could call it your aura, right? It's your entire Taurus field could be this beautiful mandala, the 7D mandala. The experience that we're having is that this energy field stores everything. It stores that bad memory, the good memory. It stores everything about you. Sacred geometry quantum healing is pretty much like in Buddhism, how you have thought experiments. Similarly, I talk about quantum contemplation, where you sit in your beautiful energy field, like you're sitting in your garden, and you observe the fruits of your life. You observe the different plants and you observe, interesting. When I was a teenager, this happened to me and this bothered me. Let me dig a little deeper on that. You see, it's never that never as beautiful as I made it just sound. You know, it's probably one of those, ooh, look at me as a teenager, you know, and then you move forward from there. It's probably that. But that's exactly what the journey is about, to be able to treat your traumas like they are treasures. And then, of course, to celebrate your good times and be grateful, to be in awe, to send love and to feel love for yourself and everything around. So, yeah.
So I have to share. I'm going to try to get this out. This is going to be a vulnerable moment for me. Because something really big just happened when we were doing that little moment closing our eyes. And I've had tears coming down my face. I don't know if anyone has noticed. Alex pinged me. So I've had tears flowing to my face since that, because there was a big betrayal in my life, a family member very close to me. I'll keep their name private for the sake of this, but that betrayed me when I was very young, that left me in a vulnerable position completely on my own. It was very traumatizing. And a similar betrayal happened with the same person just a couple weeks ago, 15 years later. And it was 15 years of lessons around the same theme. And the first time it happened, it destroyed my life almost. I thought I was going to survive it. And even though it was this happened recently, and I've been so sad in so many parts of me that this betrayal is happening, and not knowing totally how to move through it, even though I have a lot of knowledge I've gathered around these things, right? But I'm still like, wow, another really human life experience I have to deal with here. Okay, here we go. But I was able to fully step back and give myself time and space. I didn't react. I didn't overreact. I didn't say anything mean. I felt anger arising, but I didn't act on any of it. I was gentle with myself. I told myself I loved myself. I did mirror work. I sat in nature. I hugged a tree. I wanted to drink and I ate a good meal instead. And it was hard to make every one of those small choices. And I wanted to say mean things and I didn't say mean things, and I held my space and I cared for myself. And then a week later, when I was ready, I said something. And the result was very positive. And then I told this person how much I loved them, which was one of the hardest things for me to do, carrying the amount of pain that I had in me. And it was the most healing thing. The forgiveness was real and it's there, even though it wasn't asked for. I don't know how the situation will resolve itself,
but I already am so grateful that I've had the opportunity for this level of growth as a human in the last 15 years. And I know it has deepened all my relationships. And yeah, I don't know if any of that made sense or sounded, you know, made sense.
Oh, that was beautiful, my love. Vulnerability is a superpower that not enough people know how to use. So the fact that you just so beautifully said that, and that experience that you went through is such a stellar example of what I was talking about. That's such a stellar example. Thank you for sharing. If you would allow me, I'd like to unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Let's go for it. It brought, for some reason, that moment brought it really full circle too, like the synchronicity too of this 15 years and this happening, everything happening like in line and for this greater knowledge and wisdom, even though these were painful experiences and I've had to do things to heal this that I didn't want to do. But okay, I'll stop there. What do you want to, where do you want to go?
So it's really interesting, right? So now let's sort of, you know, throw on our sacred geometry goggles on, right? One, everything in geometry, everything in sacred geometry, when you look at an Islamic pattern, when you look at a flower, when you look at how a beehive behaves, right? Everything is a pattern. This pattern, when it happened to you 15 years ago, was not used to distill the treasure it had for you. And I'm going to venture a guess that 15 years ago, you took that pain and dug it deep into your heart, and it has, you know, been weighing down on you for 15 years. Yes, subconsciously, consciously, it's just been there. You've just left it there. So in Sanskrit, it's sort of like this, one of the ideas of karma is the lesson will repeat until you learn it. You see, so the universe is sitting there going, I sent you the Kohinoor diamond of lessons and you just, you know, brushed it under the rug. Hell no. 15 years later, what are the chances? The same person. And a similar betrayal. And this time, however, you were prepared. And this time, again, you had the option of the two worlds. In one world, you have already yelled at them. You have lost your cool. You have gone drinking. You have, become reckless and self-sabotaged.
100%, right? All of those. 100%. Yes.
Right. And then it's kind of turned into like a really icky, sticky, awkward situation with the family and friends, and everyone's talking about it, you know. And then there's the other world. One is not good and one is not bad. Remember, one is just a lower vibration and another one is a higher vibration. The lower vibration one, which you did not choose, in that world, you had fights, things got awkward, that you let this fester, and eventually what is not dealt with on the spiritual level or the mental level soon manifests in the physical level. It would turn into a physical illness.
I got Lyme disease.
Aha.
In 2010.
And if
five years later, if
you dig deeper into what Lyme disease is, in fact, I can actually get you that information. If you dig deeper into what Lyme disease is, you will notice it is directly connected to you not having dealt with that particular issue. You see?
Yes, which we're approaching a very difficult topic that I love to talk about, but it's very difficult to approach. And I was so offended when people first started to put this in my ear about, you know, Lyme being anything related, you know, it's very easy to put Lyme outside yourself because this tick. And this is a hard thing for me to talk about because I do believe that it was my emotional trauma that was undealt with that led 100%. To me getting sick 100% and everything I believe about vibration. But in any healing community, it's a tough topic to approach. You do this very gracefully, but
it's actually
of responsibility for that. It's there's something about like then people's reactions. Well, did I deserve this? Did I ask for this? Did I want this?
But then that goes into the severe miseducation of our culture, isn't it? It's the absolute miseducation. First comes along, I'm personally, I'm an omnist. I actually believe in all religions, all right, guys? So I actually really, I love everything that the sacred texts talk about. But that is not to say that even religion comes with its dark and its light, isn't it? However, you have this one idea, I will tell you, it exists in all cultures, I promise you that much, but the most popular one is Christian guilt. Holy cow, like I'm my mother is Christian and my father is a Hindu, but I have Christian guilt. You know? We all have it. It's so ingrained into us that if something goes wrong, then that should mean there's someone to blame. Of course, if something goes wrong, obviously, immediately we look around, like, who do I pin this on, right? That's just the miseducation we've had from a very long time. Somewhere along the line, we forgot that mistakes, failures, traumas, all of these things happen so that it can become catalysts to catapult us into the future. It helps us with our ascension. But no, why did this happen? Who do I blame for this? It is immediately outside of me. We live in this whole idea of a divided world. I had one client who was a extremely hardcore Christian. She was engaged to a pastor and, you know, she was well on the way to get married. And I'm talking about a serious, super, super, super Christian, right? Like with the cape and everything, right? And then she comes and meets me because she's having a lot of anxiety and she's having all of these issues, right? And then I began to speak to her about these concepts because she had PCOS. She had a few more sacral chakra related issues, right? And she didn't even say these to me. And I said it to her. I said, are you having issues with your uterus? Are you having issues with your ovaries? Do you have very severe periods? And she said, oh my God, yes, I do. And when then I started explaining to her that bad is a good thing. Bad is good. You know, bad is here so that you can derive the good out of it. So you can polish the diamond out of it, you know. And she said, no. In Christianity, evil is separate. Satan is on the other side. All of the bad deeds of human beings is not of God, right? So I simply asked this question, and this always brings them back, right? I asked, so tell me, if there is the bad deeds, you know, rapists and murderers and poop and flies, right? And mosquitoes, right? If all of these bad things are not of God and is of Satan, then are you telling me that something exists outside of God? No. Everything is God. God is in everything, she says. And I said, no, but you just said the bad stuff is not of God. So are you telling me that there's another world that God has no control over? No. God controls everything. But the bad is not part of it. Do you see the miseducation right there? The cognitive dissonance. It's like, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah. I was raised Christian as well. And it was confusing to me since I was a young child. I asked too many questions though. And so yeah. When I was an adult, I finally went and explored all these things. Why are there so many why do these things not, they didn't line up. There wasn't synchronicity.
And this is the same for any culture, by the way. This is the same for any religion. There is the ego of man that has twisted that religion and its principles towards one side, skewed it, right? And there's the truth. Then there's that's what's actually written in the books. So this brings us to the idea of there's all of this idea that when I fall sick, where is it coming from? And my approach to this really is, please, let's just look at the layman's signs, right? Just the basic signs. And I follow Nassim Harame and Joe Dispenza. I read white papers by, articles and research done by some of the most cleverest people, you see. And it is very clear. Now, let's rewind back, start from the beginning. So you have epigenetics, right? That has now told us it's not just your granddaddy's nose and your grandmom's ears and your, you know, uncle's hair that you're getting via your DNA. You also get all their memory and their traumas as well. Correct. So here's a child who is born. The baby is just born. Congratulations. It's a boy, right? And this baby is born. This baby is already born with its DNA encoded with all of the virtues and vices that is downloaded from previous generations, several generations in its DNA, right? This child then grows up from that point of having historic from its land and soul from its, from, you know, all of the different lives it's had, as well as the genetic codes carried into its DNA, grows up, becomes a human being, and in that time also has core problems, core limiting beliefs, core celebrations that happen. All of this data is loaded onto this person. And let's say somewhere from the historic perspective, somebody is constantly feeling anxiety. They have issues with their hypochondriac. They are afraid of things. They're afraid of their own shadows. And they have no idea where this is coming from. And you have a spiritual coach sitting down in front, healer sitting down in front of that person, doing a channeling from them and going, you know, your great-great-grandparents had to run away from their country and they had to escape and become refugees. And they were constantly watching their back. And that's why you're going through this, right? And science used to scoff at that idea. Used to say, how do you know where that comes from, right? People are able to read energies. We can't believe that. But today, science is telling you that, you know, epigenetics is beginning to tell us that maybe because you come from a war-torn land, those anxieties must be coded into your DNA. And that proof helps us to understand that, okay, so this person has this anxiety. They grow up, they decide to do nothing about it. In fact, their culture and their society does not allow them to do anything about it. Now, this anxiety, what happens with anxiety? Let's stick to layman science, right? When you're anxious, cortisol is released in your body. All of the other hormones go on vacation. You begin to have lesser sleep. You begin to have higher stress. Your blood pressure gets affected. Your intake and the distribution of nutrients get affected. And then what do you expect for that to lead to if you don't deal with that level of cortisol release? Eventually, with that level of anxiety, you're going to end up manifesting that into a physical illness. You see? And Corinne, that's why I'm saying it is hard for people to talk about it, because I have had that question asked to me in sessions as well, where a client comes to me and says, this is my issue. This is what's going on in my life. And I go, very good. This is all your fault. Let's begin. And they go, I manifested this. And I'm like, I'm going to show you how. You see, I'm a bit tough like that. But yeah.
I just want to, it's when, as you were talking about all that, it's so clear in nature, right? Yeah. If plants or animals experience something, yeah, the next generations are different. And they don't teach, they're not teaching, right? A pack of wolves is not teaching the baby. It's they show up differently because of the DNA changes so they can survive.
Correct.
And
I code into my DNA for my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren that we need to be born without tusks so that poachers don't kill us.
Mm-hmm. And
there's so much science around this, even tracking, like when geography changes and tribes or cultures have to move, and then their actual traits and their DNA change over time to adapt to the new environment or the new foods available. The fact that, you know, certain cultures can eat certain foods, and then, you know, when we travel, and we see this now too with a lot of international travel, what my gut flora is used to is not the same as when I travel to India or when I travel to, you know, Australia or whatever. So it's fascinating. We have more information about it than we think, but it's, yeah.
Okay. It's just a matter of seeing it with clarity, isn't it?
Yeah. There's so much. I feel like we have to have you on five more times, because we didn't even touch on so many things that I don't know anything about. And I know Corinne wanted to talk about. We like to ask people before we wrap up, and we're going to have to get you back because we can't just say that and not we're manifesting it.
If you're open to it, yeah, let's talk quantum healing or something next time and go deeper, even deeper.
What in your definition, how do you define a frequency shifter?
I quote Ram Dass on this. He says, there is nothing I can do for you other than work on myself. And there is nothing you can do for me other than work on yourself. A frequency shifter is someone who is less concerned about shifting the external in order to shift the internal, but shifting the internal, knowing the internal, after all, is responsible for the projection that is the external. I'm sorry if that's too complicated, but that's what a frequency shifter is for me.
It was perfect. I don't even want to mess it up by adding it. Except to say that that's the second time I heard that Ram Dass quote today. That shows me that it was meant for here. So thank you so much, Sheetal, for being with us. Your energy is absolutely divine, and the way you have put everything so beautifully and made it easy to comprehend is just so, so much appreciated. Can you just tell everyone where to find you? I know everyone listening is going to follow you, find out about your upcoming programs, and continue to learn from you.
My platform is called The Sacred Being. And I have been asked, as I give you the information, I tell you, we are all the sacred being. Someone asked me, why didn't you just call it sacred being? Why the? I said, because there's only one. And they asked me, are you the sacred being? I said, no, so are you. We're all the sacred being, you see. So thesacredbeing.com, the sacred being on Instagram, TikTok, the sacred being on Facebook, the sacred being everywhere. And then I do lots of online workshops. I'm doing retreats coming up in Bali and Slovenia. And lots of fun stuff that I do, and a lot of private coaching that I do as well. So good stuff.
Wonderful. We'll make sure to check out the show notes below. All of our frequency shifters listening will tag her website and social media. And thank you again, everyone, Sheetal, for being a part of the Frequency Shifter Show, for sharing your wisdom, and for everyone listening, joining, and being brave enough to be on your own journey. We love you, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to another episode of The Frequency Shifters. We really hope that you got some value, you learned something, and that there's something from this episode that you can take away and use in your life. Who are you thinking of right now that needs to hear this episode? Please share it with them. Share this on social media, subscribe and like and leave a comment. And please, if you have a comment or an idea or something that you want us to talk about or investigate, leave it online and we will go into those and bring you that information. Please like, share, and subscribe, and we will see you next time.